Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I have with me today Karen Pischke. She's from Boston, Massachusetts, and I happen to be just a few miles away from her right now. But we're doing this on Skype, so we're not doing it in person. I had a wonderful cosmic happening. I was going through a group of emails that I found on the website in a little like treasure box. And I ran into her email about 2 weeks ago. And I just said, well, you're from Boston and I'm coming there. So let's get together. And we are. And meanwhile, I found out more about who she is and what she does in her Reiki practice. And I said, well, you're a perfect person to be interviewed. So she also said yes to this. And here we are. So, Karen, welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me. I feel it's an honor.
Oh, you're welcome. And it's an honor for us also to be able to listen to your sharing about where your life has taken you in Reiki. So, first of all, I always love hearing Reiki stories. And this is what I'd love for you to do first, is to share with us your Reiki story. How did you meet Reiki? And what was it like for you in the beginning? Things like that.
My first experience with Reiki was at a nursing conference in 1998. And my background as a nurse is in critical care nursing. I went to a conference where they host speakers for educational units, and also it was a job fair. And I was at the time looking for a change in my nursing career. And two different lectures at that conference, one was a woman from Cape Cod speaking about Reiki, which I had not heard of at that point. And she spoke of Reiki in terms of energy therapy that can help promote self-healing. And then the other woman speaking was a motivational speaker, Rita Losi, who has done some amazing things in her career. And she was talking about living life in the skidding branches.
Living life
in the skinny branches.
In the skinny branches, like of trees.
Like of trees. The metaphor for taking a risk. And those two lectures came together at that same conference. And then at the conference, there was a woman, Susan Nordimo, who was a nurse. She had a booth where she was demonstrating Reiki, and I agreed to come and have a session with her. So a short time later, I went and had a session with Sue, and it was such a profound, deep relaxation like I had never experienced before. And I was still lying on the table. I remember having this experience of detachment and not being completely aware of where I had been for the hour that passed. And afterwards, I said to her, that was amazing. Why aren't we doing this in healthcare? And she said at the time, because they don't really understand the energy. And I said, well, I don't even know what this energy is. At the time, that was a foreign concept to me. So I said, but that was the deepest relaxation I've ever experienced. And we know the physiologic response of the relaxation response. We know the positive physiologic benefits. So why don't we introduce it from that perspective? And that's what I started to do. I started to learn Reiki from Sue with this idea of somehow being able to bring it into mainstream healthcare. And after I had done the level one training with Sue, it was more about self-care for me too. You know, the concept of relaxation and stress management was really helpful for me. And then about a year into my practice, the hospital I was working at, I was working for a cardiac risk factor reduction program, cardiac rehab, and they asked me if I would be interested in offering Reiki there. They knew that I had been studying with Sue and had an interest in it, and the person that they had hired was there for just 3 months and left because the volume was too low, she said.
The volume was too low? Like not enough patients?
Not enough patients.
Wow.
So I said I would be interested, but they said that I had to be trained to the second degree to work with Reiki in a hospital setting.
Wow.
So I went back to Sue. Pardon?
That's interesting. You normally the hospitals, well, anyway, normally most people in hospitals don't have a sense of that kind of
well, criteria. And I'm not sure where that came from, Phyllis, because at that time when Sue trained me in Reiki, she also gave that directive that if you want to use Reiki in a clinical setting, you really should train at least to the second degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the hospitals in this area at that time, that was the standard of practice for Reiki practitioners, a minimal level of training to the second degree.
Interesting.
So I went back to Sue and did the second degree training and was working with Sue in a mentoring relationship.
Uh-huh.
And then after about 6 months, I started to offer Reiki to patients in this outpatient setting. And very shortly in the practice, I realized I didn't know enough. People would have responses that I wasn't fully able to guide them through, and they had
right.
questions that I wasn't fully able to answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to Sue and asked if she would train me to the third degree. And I did the third degree training with Sue, and it still, though, it took, I would say, 4 years into my practice to really feel a level of comfort working with Reiki in that manner in a clinical setting.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with Reiki with outpatient patients for stress reduction, the goal of cardiac risk factor reduction, particularly lowering blood pressure. And then people started asking for Reiki for surgical support. And I had, in the meantime, developed a small practice up on the North Shore. Actually, it's part of Cape Ann where I live, north of Boston in Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened up a small practice up there and began to support people before, during, and after surgery at various hospitals around the area. People would consult me and I would get permission from the hospital to go in and offer Reiki. And there was such positive feedback from both the patients and the nursing staff and some of the medical staff that I began to tell my director at the North Shore Medical Center about these experiences. So when one of the patients at the hospital asked for Reiki for surgical support, I was given permission, and they had such a positive experience at each step of the way that my director got permission for us to offer a formal program of Reiki for surgical support.
Wow, that's great.
And that was an interesting case. That first case that I would say opened the door there was a woman undergoing needle-guided breast biopsy. So I was with her in the radiology department and then also in the pre-op holding area, in the surgical area, and in the post-op recovery area. And at each step, nurses and doctors seemed to notice that she was doing a little bit better than most, more relaxed, more comfortable. So it really helped them to take notice of how Reiki might be helpful in those settings.
And that's really fabulous because in my experience, of course, and most everybody, that Reiki post and pre and post surgery, Reiki is really an amazing ally. And I think that's really fascinating. And then to get into also cancer oncology care is amazing. So that's really neat how it happened.
in the beginning, there was, I would tell you, a lot of skepticism and sideways glances when I would come into those areas. But about a year into it, and we started the formal program in 2003, and about a year into it, I actually had an anesthesiologist give me the thumbs up. And one of the surgeons stopped me in the hall one day and said, "You know, that Reiki really works."
Wow, cool.
So, and then in 2005, I was asked to offer Reiki in the cancer setting.
Uh-huh.
And that was part of an integrative medicine program where patients were also offered massage and acupuncture.
Great.
And we would see patients in both the medical oncology and the radiation oncology areas.
Uh-huh.
And in the radiation oncology areas, people are usually there for a fairly short stay. They go oftentimes 5 to 7 days a week, so they're not there for very long, and they might only want to spend a few minutes having Reiki, either before or after their radiation.
Right.
You know, maybe up to 15 minutes. And then in the medical oncology area, they would be receiving their infusion, their chemotherapy infusion, so I could spend a little bit longer time with those people. But the most significant response, I would say, would be the reduction in anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the areas that some of the preliminary research has indicated that Reiki is statistically significant in lowering anxiety levels.
Uh-huh. So tell me why that's important in cancer care, or any care, actually.
The lowering of the anxiety, or the fact that it's statistically significant?
No, the lowering of anxiety.
Well, when people are anxious, it affects them on all levels. It can affect them physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in negative ways. Physically, when people are anxious, their body responds with the stress response. They can have an elevated blood pressure and heart rate. Breathing becomes more shallow and rapid. They tend to clench physically, so that increases muscle tension. The increased muscle tension makes it more difficult for IVs to be inserted, for portacaths to be accessed.
Uh-huh.
Emotionally, they become sometimes more emotionally labile, depressed.
Uh-huh.
They may have more difficulty focusing,
mm-hmm.
lack clarity of thinking, and they're in an environment where they are given a lot of information, so it's important that they're able to take in that information in a clearer manner if possible, and lowering anxiety allows them to think more clearly and to better focus.
Huh. That's great.
So, and then behaviorally too, if they're stressed, they're more apt to engage in negative behaviors such as overeating or the behaviors of smoking or excess alcohol.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So lowering the anxiety can help physiologically, but also mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. When their anxiety is less, I think it's a little bit easier for them to feel connected to their caregivers.
Uh-huh. Huh, interesting.
And then also less likely to engage in those negative behaviors that
uh-huh.
are, you know, adding more harm
mm-hmm.
to their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that's good to hear. So are these programs still going on?
They have been a little bit stalled, unfortunately. Where I was at the North Shore Medical Center, we had, back in 2005, I would say probably one of the largest, biggest growth programs of Reiki programs in the area. We had 4 Reiki masters, we had a Reiki clinic that was run by Florence Whipple and Kristen Webb.
Oh, yeah.
Nancy Arabino and myself, both nurses, were doing the outpatient, inpatient, private Reiki sessions, and Florence and Kristen were supporting the clinic sessions with their volunteers and their students. They actually teach Reiki in an accredited program at the North Shore Community College. So they would organize volunteers and students to support the clinic.
Uh-huh.
And then we had the surgical support, and we had our Reiki research project going on.
Oh, wow.
And then in 2011, I moved on from there to the Mass General Cancer Center. Well, actually, it was before that, 2010. So for a period of time, I was working in both systems, but it got to be a little bit too much, so I left the North Shore Medical Center and was focusing more on my private work and the work with Mass General. And then Nancy was still there at the North Shore Medical Center, as well as Kristen and Florence. But it's not as championed as it was back then. We had a director that was really pro-integrative medicine and very supportive of the Reiki programs. And you really need to have that champion in the administrative level for these programs to flourish, I think. At that point, a lot of what had happened was patient-driven, kind of a grassroots.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, with patients asking for these services and the hospital wanting to provide them.
Mm-hmm.
But you also still need that champion in the administrative level that if they don't embrace Reiki, at least they support Reiki.
Right.
You know, and if you have someone that supports and embraces Reiki, I think you're going to see much faster growth in the program.
Right, for sure.
So at one time, almost all the hospitals here on the North Shore had a Reiki program. And Nancy had a program at Anna Jakes Hospital. She did Reiki for their cardiac rehab.
Wow.
They just recently let go of that because of financial issues.
Oh.
And Kristen and Florence continued with the Reiki clinic at the North Shore Medical Center. There's a Reiki clinic at Addison Gilbert Hospital in Gloucester and at Beverly Hospital in Danvers. I do some outpatient Reiki there. They're now part of the Lahey Hospital system. So 5 different systems in the area of the North Shore had Reiki. And they still do to some extent. It's a little bit stalled. It's not moving forward quite as readily as it had been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it leads me to ask if sort of what your idea, let's see, sorry, I'm stuttering. It leads me to ask you what you feel we, as the Reiki community, can do to assist supporting these programs. Because it feels like, you know, there's an initial enthusiasm, sort of like when people take first degree and they just want to put their hands on everybody.
Right.
And then and that lasts for sometimes years in people and other times a few months. But then there comes a time when there needs to be something deeper that supports the practice. And I'm just wondering if you have a sense about what that could be from our side.
And I absolutely agree with that. I think what has happened, what I've seen happen from 2005 to 2012 particularly, was such a rapid growth in Reiki practitioners and you know, almost like a churning out of Reiki practitioners.
Right.
That it feels like it's grown too fast, that in that rapid growth, some of the foundation of the practice has gone by the wayside.
Uh-huh.
So I hear from a lot of people that everybody seems to know somebody that does Reiki. But I'm not always hearing the most positive responses.
Right.
Sometimes I hear, well, I had that and it didn't really do anything for me. And if a lot of people are having those, what I call more neutral responses, it starts to go by the wayside, and then people start looking for something different, something more, something better. Whereas if they have a deep Reiki experience, then it's a wow session.
Right.
And by that I mean after the session, and that was my experience afterwards, I said, wow, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And with the deeper experiences, you hear that on a more consistent level.
Yes.
And I didn't really realize that until I began to work in the cancer setting. And now in the cancer setting, instead of seeing a few people here and there, I would see 4 to 10 people in a day.
Right.
And sometimes I would hear, well, I had Reiki before, and it didn't really do anything. Or I had Reiki before, and it frightened me.
Yes.
Or I had Reiki before, and it really, I didn't feel anything. And that was the first time that I had any sense that it was something other than a wow, because what I experienced and what my colleagues would talk about, we would have these meetings quarterly. We would meet for a Reiki Master Network meeting, and everybody was having really positive, amazing experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So this sense of a kind of a non-experience or a neutral experience or a null experience was odd to me. And I can only attribute it to the fact that in this rush to move forward, people tend not to take the time to go deeper.
When you say that, I'm just wondering what you mean, like on kind of a pragmatic level. Like, are you saying that people aren't really paying attention to their experience, and so they're not really understanding what they're receiving, or they just maybe go forward in their Reiki experience too quickly, or?
I think they go forward too quickly. And uh-huh. when Reiki, and you know better than I, when Reiki first came to this culture, it was learned over a number of years to go from level one, first degree, to third degree master level.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you see some classes where people are doing first, second, and third degree within 1 month. Or first degree and second degree within a weekend. And for some people, you know, maybe that works. But what I liked about the way that it was initially taught was there was a period of time and a period of integration of Reiki practice at each level, so that you worked with it on self particularly. And if you were lucky and fortunate to have a supportive teacher, you were provided with a Reiki clinic or share where you could practice hands-on under their supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And so when questions came up, you had some guidance in how to explain that, to answer the questions and to explain the experiences in a way that was supportive and enveloped the person, rather than possibly turning someone off from Reiki. So, and then there was a time between each level and a period of integration and more of a apprenticeship mentoring style where the foundation was really able to be set.
Mm-hmm.
And individual spiritual growth was encouraged in that too. So it wasn't just, run quickly through this so that you have a certificate saying that you are a master, and then went out and started to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing just a lot of rapid training nowadays that feels to me that it doesn't quite capture the essence of Reiki, and it dilutes some of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly, you know, I hear that from feedback from patients.
Interesting. Well, this is kind of a quandary for me in this whole, you know, arena of trying to find out why, you know, this question about why is this happening? And there are a couple of things for me. One is that, let's see, how can I say this? I feel that one of the things about studentship is that the masters need to be able to support the student in their growth. So when I was a very young master and I was initiating masters, I was really lucky because those masters had already met Hawaii Otakata. I mean, those young students, some of them were initiated in first and sometimes second degree by Hawaii Otakata, and those were the first masters that I initiated, right? And so mm-hmm. I was really lucky because, you know, whatever shortfall I had, they really, they were ready to go because of Hawaii Otakata, right? And the years of experience and the grounding and the energetic support that she carried. And I didn't have that. So when I, the first few masters that I initiated are still practicing, basically, and they're really strong. And, I attribute that to, Hawaii Otakata, not to me. And then, when I started to initiate masters that I had initiated in first and second degree, I had a little bit of a dip. So I don't know, I gleaned from that even though I took a bit more time than some of the people now, I didn't have the energetic wherewithal to actually support these people in their practice.
Uh-huh.
And especially at that level. But I grew into it, and so did they. And the ones who have stuck with the practice are doing really well still. And, you know, there were others who got lost by the wayside for many, many different reasons. So that's one piece that I feel like is really important just to put into the mix, because I don't think there's any one factor that really stands out. But there are all these different things that are going on. And then the other piece is that I'm really an advocate for a further training program for public practitioners. And what I mean by public practitioners of Reiki, I mean people who are going to be hired by yeah. medical facilities or medical care facilities like hospice and maybe outpatient clinics and so on. And I have never been able to fund that because what I realize is that I really need funds for this
uh-huh.
In order to do a program that I want to do. And also the students don't have an understanding of why, of the difference between a good folk art practice and a public practice. So for me, the two of them look very similar on one level, but then the public practice really can take on a different dimension once experience and recognition stand behind that public practitioner. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think so. In public practice, I tend to refer to that as a professional practice.
Yeah.
You're working as a professional Reiki provider, and there's a lot of other therapeutic practices that have come to be through the years that have a lot more standardized training behind them.
Right.
And I've had these conversations even at the administrative level where I'm not sure they fully understand there is a difference between level one, level two, level three. And I don't think they fully understand that Reiki not only currently is not regulated, but it lacks a standard of training even. So here we have acupuncture requires 1,500 hours of training to use as a professional practice. Massage, I think, is 650 hours of training. Polarity is 500 hours of training. Yoga is 200 hours of training. And yet we have Reiki, some programs where people are doing 16 hours or 32 hours of training and going into practice. And those other therapies that I mentioned, they also have clinical practicum requirements that have to be satisfied before they can earn their certificates. Mm-hmm. And they're national organizations that certify. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Reiki, we don't have a core national certification program.
No.
And I think for to really excel at that professional level and be fully embraced in healthcare, that would be really helpful.
Yes.
Some kind of standards at a national level.
Right. Which always, you know, freaks people out.
Yeah.
Which I and totally understand. I mean, it freaks me out on some level. But, the interesting piece is to, first of all, have an understanding of where Reiki falls within healthcare itself, you know, just as a, is it something that can, you know, do we feel like it's something that can stand alone as a partner in integrative care, or is it something that has to be partnered with something else? Do you know what I mean?
I see it stand alone as part of integrative medicine in all the settings I've worked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've seen it be at least somewhat embraced, sometimes very embraced, depending on
right
the medical staff, and patients absolutely embrace it. Not everybody wants to have Reiki though, and I think that's an important piece too. There's, like you said, the level one practitioner, all we want to do is offer Reiki to everybody we can. And what I've learned through the years is that even people who love Reiki, who want to have Reiki on a regular basis, sometimes they're just not in the mood for it. And I think it's important that they have a right to choose and say yes or no when they're offered sessions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I think even though, you know, Reiki is wonderful and we know how much it can do, we have to honor and respect where other people are, not only for receiving Reiki, but working alongside healthcare practitioners who maybe aren't open to it yet.
Right. Right.
So I have always said, back in 2004, I gave a lecture on Reiki in hospitals for a Reiki conference that they used to hold out here, the New England Reiki Conference. And when someone asked me what would be the best way to bring Reiki into healthcare, I said, quiet patient perseverance. And that was in 2004. Now, almost 10 years later, that's still my advice.
Oh, I totally agree with you around that.
You know, because when people come on too strong that tends to push people back.
Right. But then I feel that, on the other hand, as the Reiki community, we also need to be more clear about our own priorities and our willingness to... Excuse me.
Bless you.
To prepare ourselves for the work. And I don't mean preparing ourselves through becoming medical. I mean preparing ourselves by adding the 500 hours of practice and training or 1,000 hours of practice and training that create a professional foundation for the practice itself.
I think that would be very helpful.
Yeah. Great.
And I think it would elevate how Reiki is viewed by other professional practices.
Right. Well, I totally agree. I mean, you know, as a folk art, it's I think it's very successful. And what I mean by folk art is that it's practiced and it's within family and friends and in your close circles, and you know, it's for you. But when you go outside into the arena of what you call public practice, I mean professional practice, and I call it public practice, then I feel like what happens is, like for you, you borrow on your training as a nurse and all the other, you know, healthcare understanding that you have in order to provide that standard of care. But if you hadn't had that training, you know, in another part of your life, you wouldn't be as well prepared as you are now.
I think that's a very good point, and I know that having the nursing in my background has been very helpful for opening those doors in healthcare.
Right.
And I have to applaud my colleagues around the country, because I know Reiki programs are in many hospitals all throughout the nation. So a lot of people are doing a lot of good work out there. But I think that when you come at it from a more, as you said, grounded professional perspective, and you don't really need to know the medical lingo.
No.
I actually, even as a nurse, when I go to see patients, I'm not there as their nurse. So the less I know, the less I get into their actual medical care, the better, because that's not my role there.
Right.
I'm only there to provide Reiki in these settings.
Right.
And it's much more helpful and beneficial to be able to explain things with the type of terminology that's used in healthcare. They're not as accepting of terminology that is of a more metaphysical bent.
Right.
It's just not in their consciousness or in the way that they speak. So how we speak as professional Reiki practitioners, the semantics that we use, is really important. And I think that's part of what's been helpful for me working with Reiki in the different healthcare settings. It's not just the fact that I'm a nurse, but it's the language I use when I speak of Reiki.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. And there is, I believe that we can create a language, so to speak, that's very practical, very down to earth, and hopefully not too much of jargon that can be used in professional healthcare settings and be able to talk to people and feel like we're having an intelligent conversation with someone. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the things I have, 10 years into my practice, I began training with Inamoto Sensei from Kyoto, Japan, and he talks about keeping it simple with Reiki practice.
Right.
And I do think you actually can get further along when you keep it simple.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I will hopefully, you know, be able to continue to study, because there's always so much more to learn. I think of Reiki Master, which is a term I don't particularly care to use that term. I like to use the verb, you know, third degree, trained to the third degree, a Reiki teacher. Reiki Master in this culture seems to have a very different connotation than the term or the concept of mastery in Asian culture. And, you know, you studied as an apprentice in whatever trade that you're learning, but it's ongoing learning, a right. lifetime. So the mastery you never quite get there, because there's always something more to learn.
Right.
That's what I think anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Interesting. Well, maybe we could head back along our path of conversation. And I would really love for you to describe, or I don't know if summarize is really the right word, your impressions of the value of Reiki treatment for people who are undergoing treatment for cancer. And any advice you might have for people.
I think they get benefit beyond what I can even understand sometimes, Phyllis.
Mm.
The statements that I have heard are, and I have heard this, you know, multiple times, is, you don't know what this means for me. And on some level, I don't know, but it seems to touch people on a very deep level. And I think that's been one of the difficulties too, is people see Reiki as just this light touch. It's so easy. It's so gentle. But when you touch them on that deeper level, it's so much more. And it gives many people a level of hope. And it's hard to really understand how that works, what the mechanism of action is for it to create that level of hope. But I just heard last night from a friend, someone I've been working with for a number of years, who had been given very little hope. It's been at least 3-4 years, and they're taking a trip of a lifetime next week for their birthday. And they have been supported through Reiki over the last number of years. So I think it really gives people a sense of hope, and there's oftentimes a relief of discomfort, which once you relieve pain, then people have an idea that they can have pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
So even a little bit of relief can go a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually seen a great deal of relief of pain with patients. It hasn't really been evidenced in the research that's out there, but in my experience and other people I know that work with patients in Reiki, oftentimes they report a relief of pain. And that would be substantially significant in the healthcare setting, in the cancer setting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then some of the treatments can be harsh. So the role of the integrative medicine is to support patients through those harsh treatments that are sometimes their not only best chance, but maybe even their only chance to survive. And if you can support them through the harsh treatment to the other side of it, then you can see amazing results.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people do report fewer side effects when they have Reiki or the other integrative medicine therapies, the massage, the acupuncture. They seem to have fewer side effects, or the side effects that they have are more easily alleviated, the nausea, the fatigue. the difficulty sleeping.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm sure there's probably more benefit beyond that that we haven't fully evidenced in our research yet. And there's a lot of research that could be done with Reiki. There's so many ways that we could look at Reiki that have not been looked at. You know, and in the healthcare world, research is necessary to fully support and embrace therapies. They want to know that therapies are safe, but they also want to know that therapies are effective. And just word of mouth, hearsay of people's experiences in mainstream healthcare isn't enough. They want to see the data behind it.
Right.
So, and having a more professional practice would help, you know, having that research behind it would also help in developing more professional practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Acupuncture has taken off tremendously in the last 5 years, and there's a lot of research behind acupuncture nowadays.
Uh-huh. So it would be like the effectiveness of acupuncture.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Well, I met this Brazilian man who, unfortunately, were trying to get his thesis, his doctoral thesis, translated into English, because it's a really good study. I really liked his group size and so on. I feel like he did a great job. And I feel like there's a lot of, there's a momentum of research now that's being done that's incredible. And it's not about proving Reiki exists. It's about the effect of Reiki physiologically on the body. And I feel like this is going to really benefit everybody, actually.
I agree. And you're right. There's been, in the last 5 years especially, it's almost like this exponential increase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what a couple of people have said to me who have been doing the research is that now there are machines, I mean, there's actually technology that can measure some of the things that couldn't be measured before. And I find that interesting, that the technology advances of measuring energy and different kinds of physiological differences are now in place. And with that, the possibility of doing research with the effect of Reiki has grown exponentially.
Absolutely, because early on, and when I started doing research in 2005, they weren't, and I'm not sure if they still are, looking at what happens during a Reiki session with PET scanning or functional MRIs,
uh-huh.
And those have been used to research some of the other therapies. So, you know, and to have those research studies done at the level of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, also elevates the credibility behind the study.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, fascinating.
So I think we're at this incredible exponential growth of Reiki practice.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I have one last question for you. I know our time just went like that. In all of this, and you were speaking earlier about the possible reduced effectivity of Reiki for a number of reasons. I'm just wondering about this piece. Like, sometimes Reiki works, but it's not really obvious that it's working. And it works in different ways. So, for instance, some of the people that I've treated that have had a condition like cancer or something, they ask me, well, will Reiki cure me? And sometimes I have to say, well, I don't know. But I do know that it can do this and this and this and this. And then what they find is that it looks like nothing is happening, but really something is happening on a much deeper level. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's really about coming to peace with this is your moment of, this is how you're going to die. This is how, you know, your life is going to end. And you have, and it give, and the Reiki treatments seem to give people the energy and the wherewithal to do it with grace and with a lot of peace and completion. And I don't know, how do you figure that into effectivity?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that would be more difficult to measure, but you're absolutely right. I think, and I was always taught in working with Reiki to never guarantee cure.
Right.
And to not diagnose.
Right.
So when I approach people, I always say, we won't know how it helps until you try it. And it can help on any level, you know, mind, body, spirit. So, and every session tends to be different and works on something different. But right. if it helps people come to that level of peace and acceptance when their life has come to that point of transition, what a wonderful gift that is.
Yes, I mean,
To measure that, you know, you could measure it from a socio-emotional perspective,
Mm-hmm, right.
But I mean, that's almost immeasurable from a human perspective
mm-hmm.
to know how much value you put behind achieving peace at the end, at any stage of our life, but especially at the end of our life.
Right.
But I think that's why so many people are using Reiki in hospice, because they do see it helps people be more peaceful as they transition.
Right. Well, you know, I found it really interesting that years ago, like maybe 20 years ago or so, when Reiki was first coming out of the first closet, I will call it, you know, people were really excited about going into hospice and, you know, treating people in the under hospice care. And there were a couple of clear instances where the hospice people said, no, we're not going to have you come because we're afraid that you're going to have the motivation to give people Reiki and cure their cancer or cure, you know, whatever, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, reverse whatever is happening. And it was really difficult to convince them that that wasn't so. And, you know, of course, it might have been a little bit of the motivation of the actual practitioners. Who do we know? How do we know? But anyway, eventually, the actual application of Reiki came into hospice a lot because people asked for it and their friends or family or something had Reiki, and they didn't have to ask permission. They just went in and did it. So then the hospice people realized that Reiki was supporting life, but life was death was a part of life. And so if this is where this person was going in their life path was to die, then Reiki would support that. And it was really interesting change. And now what I understand is that Reiki is a very big part of many hospice programs.
Yes, it is, and it's been used in hospice around here. One of the things I found interesting, though, because it takes me back to my original training with Sue, when she said that to work with Reiki in a clinical setting, one ought to be at least a second degree
uh-huh.
Reiki practitioner. And when they started introducing it in hospice, they only required level one. And I think, again, it's because there's that concept of Reiki does no harm. But I still feel that hospice is a clinical setting. And to fully support people, to be able to answer questions, to allow people to have peaceful feelings, I still think it would be helpful to have more training and to have the ability to use Reiki from a distance is very helpful. Reiki in abstention, non-touch techniques in some cases in hospice is also very helpful. So I still think that that is where more advanced training would be helpful. But a lot of people are doing programs with level one. And I was always taught that level one was really focused on self-care.
Well,
so I don't know how you feel about that. And certainly Reiki in that setting is extremely helpful and important, but I still have a sense that it would be good to have more training, even in that setting.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a really interesting question that there's no real answer for. And that is that, how in something like Reiki, which is an experientially based practice, how much training replaces years of experience? Like, I have to say that there are a lot of first degree students who have had Reiki for 20 or 30 years, and I would totally trust them in any setting.
Good
because
point.
Of their own, because of their the depth of their experience of the practice. And then you get a second degree student who, took second degree like a couple of weeks ago or even 2 years ago, and they don't have nearly the understanding about what Reiki can offer than this first degree student.
That is a very good point.
But it's an there's another interesting question. I mean, these are all questions that we've gone round and around about. The other interesting piece of this is that students who come to second degree often have a different, their practice often comes from a different place within themselves as a human being. And it often comes from a place of a more depth of dedication to the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And not always, but often. And maybe that makes a difference too. I have no idea. But the thing, this is my little soapbox coming out again. But the thing that would level the playing field, so to speak, on all these questions is to have a professional public practice program for Reiki, and anyone could come and take it, but it would be geared toward really giving people training to do the kind of conversations that you're talking about, to work in a professional manner, to be able to do the obvious things, like even make good notes, mm-hmm. and do your own accounting and be sure that you've got record keeping and, all that stuff, but also develop the person in this way so that they meet other professionals as peers. And, I don't think that you get peership out of the Reiki practice that we have now because it's not meant to be in this kind of setting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Chijiro Hayashi had his clinic, he was a peer because he was a medical doctor, but also because the healthcare system, if we could call it, or philosophy of Japan at that time was really different than what we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Very different. So, they totally, shiatsu and acupuncture and Reiki and, hydrotherapy and all those things were just automatically put into healthcare. I mean, it was obvious, right? And that's not so obvious anymore.
Not in the United States anyway, and to a lesser degree in other countries.
And interestingly enough, a lesser degree in Japan now.
Yeah.
I have Japanese doctors who have been talking to me about how they want to bring integrative medicine into Japan.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it was very integrated back then. So it's interesting that we have it more in the U.S. now and less in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, huh? How it's all shifted around. But I think that one of the components that's going to be really important in this whole movement is the participation of the patient, him or herself.
Yes.
And I think this is really different. You know, I feel like we're taking back our own right to heal ourselves in the broadest sense of the word. And to be able to make your own choices is a very important, empowering factor in any kind of condition that has to do with body, mind, or spirit.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is one thing that I feel that the Reiki in the cancer setting does empower people. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to them about Reiki, I let them know that they receive Reiki however they need to, and they have an active role in that,
right,
even on a subconscious level. And it is very empowering. It gives them an aspect of having some sense of control in an arena where they have very little control.
Exactly. I totally agree. Well, Karen, we have to stop. It's really sad.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me too, and a pleasure for our listeners, I'm sure. Take care, and thank you very much for your time and for sharing your experiences.
And enjoy your stay on KPN.
Thank you. I will. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.